Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What can we do to fight back against Big Pharma and the compromised medical industry? We can become healthy and break free from the perpetual cycle of being poisoned by criminal organizations like most pharmaceutical companies. Come check out what may be the most powerful antioxidant known to man, C60 Purple Power. The benefits of C60 have been personally outstanding. I use it every day and I feel incredible. I have tons of energy, I sleep great, and I haven't even come down with a cold since I started using C60 over 2 years ago. You can even get C60 for your pets. Do your own research. Click the link in the description and check out their website. If you order from that link or use coupon code KNOWLEDGE10, you get 10% off your order plus free shipping. What is your health worth to you?
Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is Ryan Musgrave Evans. First, I have a couple of announcements. Do you have a business, podcast? Do you produce content, music, artwork? If you are someone embracing their inner creator and you want to share it with our audience by advertising with us, email me, forbiddenknowledgenews@gmail.com. We're doing incredible productions for our affiliates, and I work very closely with you on an individual basis to create the most effective ad possible. Check out our website, forbiddenknowledge.news. It's also the home of the Forbidden Knowledge Network. This is where you find some of your favorite podcasts from our community, like Raised by Giants, Understanding Propaganda, Day Zero, and more. Forbidden Knowledge News is always available on Rockfin, Odyssey, Rumble, and all podcast platforms. Rockfin is where you get the premium content. You also get all the premium content from every creator on Rockfin for only $10 a month. You can also create a free account and get access to everyone's free content, including all of our regular shows. Just go to rockfin.com/FKN+ to sign up or click the link in the description. Today I want to welcome Ryan Musgrave Evans. He is an author and lifelong experiencer of incredible crypto-terrestrial contact with a race of future humans. Ryan, welcome. How you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for having me, Chris. How you going?
Yeah, I'm doing great. This is going to be excellent. You have one of the most incredible contact accounts that I've really ever heard. I can't wait to share this with my audience. And your case really resonates with me on many levels. There's lots of correlations with many other cases in the past as well. It's very fascinating and terrifying at the same time, but definitely an incredible case. Now, this is your first time on. For the audience that may not be familiar, tell us a little bit about your background and how did this all start for you?
Well, I'm an Australian. I live in Victoria, the state of Victoria. I've been a few things over my life, just, you know, occupation wise. I've been a primary school teacher or elementary school teacher. I've been a what we call a nursery worker in Australia, which means working on plant farms. We used to work on tree farms for years and things like that. With the paranormal side of things, it's been happening all my life. To a lesser extent when I was younger, maybe in my teenage years sort of picked up a little bit, but really started kicking in hardcore probably about 10 years ago. So I'm 43 now. So probably in my early 30s when we moved, my wife and I moved back to where I'd come from, where I'd grown up as a kid and things like that, it all really picked up and hit another level again. And the kinds of experiences I've had all my life, I would have categorized them early on as being fairy or elf or tree spirit. That's the kind of label I would have given them in those days. And that inspired me to get really interested in things like the Celtic fairy faith and world folklore and mythology, particularly European and things like that. But since the more recent bout of activity started about 10 years ago, the interactions took on a more quintessential UFO ET abduction kind of vibe, which made me get incredibly interested in that world and that area. And then it occurred to me that these were the same dudes. Basically, it started to occur to me that there was this common substratum all the way through my life, and that they had not presented themselves in certain ways earlier on and were presenting themselves slightly differently now that I was older, but was nonetheless the same race. Lots of experiences all my life. So many, I was just talking to my wife about this the other week. I've had so many experiences that people would say were paranormal that I forget so many of them, and then I'll see them written down. And I'll go, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. That happened to me 5 years ago. This, how could I have forgotten that, you know?
Yeah.
Like just lots and lots of stuff. But, anyway, so,
well, maybe
so,
you
so
could
that's
give
me.
Us, yeah, man. Well, maybe you could give us an example of how things changed from your childhood to now. How were things whenever you were younger? How did this manifest?
When I was younger, it manifested more as poltergeist activity, as shadow people, figures, even during the daytime, like peeking at me from behind trees and things like that. And there's one particular experience I had when I was four. I would in a few weeks I would have been turning five. And down at a local golf course where there was a woodland there of North American pine trees, this small woodland, I saw a being behind a tree looking out at me with a triangular, at the time I thought like a triangular shaped face, but I thought it looked like a mask. Four really long fingers coming out from behind the tree. The texture of it sort of looked like it was melting into the tree. It's the texture of it was bark-like. And since then I've seen those suits again, and they are a kind of a suit, like a soldier suit, a camouflage suit. But so that experience stayed with me. That was a vivid experience. But in the last 10 years, the experiences, though, they've shown themselves more without what you might call glamoury or, memory manipulation or mesmerization and hypnosis and things like that. Yeah. And that's when I was thinking, oh, these guys look more like something like more typical kind of ET in some ways, especially their medics that have big dark eyes, they're wearing lenses. But when you see them, when they don't have the lenses, in their eyes are blue, this particular race, and then also more medical procedure like interactions. Whereas when I was a kid, the closest thing to that I would have had was feeling hands on me in the middle of the night, like feeling touching and rolled over and like hands on my back and things like that. And then I'd be like, there's no one there. Now that was probably the closest thing they may have been sort of like residue feelings and consciousness of medical type procedures then, but I was interpreting them differently maybe or something like that. But certainly in more recent times, drills, you know, like drilling into me and putting things into the back of my head, causing intense pain while it's actually happening up into the bottom of my skull, and checking my teeth, and put scanning me and things like that. So that's where the, like that real sort of what people normally think of when they think of an abduction kind of scenario, that kind of thing. But I also said to them at one stage, this was probably about 9 years ago, I'm not quite sure how long ago now, hey, that's well and good that you're allowing me to remember these kinds of things, because I was quite cognizant of the fact that they can manipulate a mind, and I always have been, but and cancel memories and suppress memories. And I realized that they usually don't do anything. They don't do things accidentally. So if I was remembering these incidents, I was being allowed to remember them. I felt fairly sure of that. So I said to them, sort of just projecting a message to them one day, thanks for allowing me to remember these medical procedures, but I'd prefer if you actually came and visited me. Maybe you can come and we can have an interaction. You know, you can come and visit. Maybe you can have a cup of coffee, have a beer, you know. So I suppose this is more like a CE5, human-initiated contact. Maybe you could categorize it as. And it was, I think it was like a few nights later, I was standing in the kitchen with who at the time I thought was my wife. A woman leaning against the kitchen bench, a kitchen counter, and I was standing on the opposite side of a kitchen table, and we were engrossed in this conversation. And I can't remember the details of it, unfortunately, but it was interesting. We were talking for an extended, prolonged period. I don't know how long. It could have been anything from 10 minutes to an hour. Not sure. And then my memory, my brain started to cloud over, and I felt slightly strange, and I fell down to my knees, and I started crawling out of the kitchen. And when some of these experiences happen, there's a sort of like an obsessive compulsive, like an OCD element that starts to manifest in me when they're manipulating. So I took socks and started rolling them up into balls and started lining them up along the carpet. And in other events, I've done it with money, lining up money while they're standing around, and all of a sudden I'll sort of go a bit weird and I'll start sorting money if it's to hand and things like that. Like they're putting me in some kind of state, like a temporary sort of state when they're not interacting with me or something. Then I levitated, was put back in bed over the top of my wife, who was sound asleep. And they sat me down on the bed, and that's when and then they relinquished control. And that's when I started freaking out, adrenaline rushes just pumping through my body. And a voice said into my head, really clear feminine voice said, "We just had a date." And then I really started freaking out. And she said, "I roll my eyes at you." Like she was rebuking me for reacting in such a fearful manner. Like I should know better by now. That was this kind of implication. And then, sorry, there's a lot of traffic noise here at the moment.
Oh, no worries.
Hopefully my mic's not picking that up too much. And then I could hear her walking through the house, open the front door, close the front door, and then walk out the driveway and hear the rocks crunching under her feet. So up until that point, I'd been having interactions that I was remembering, but they were like in the past, like the more recent sort of ET-like ones, they'd been of that kind of medical procedure kind of bent, but this was like a social interaction. And then when I thought about what she looked like, I was thinking, how could I have thought that was my wife? Because then I could break through what might be, you might call a screen memory or a glamoury or something like that. And she was at least 6 foot tall, incredibly white, huge blue eyes that slanted out slightly, a nose that doesn't have the same kind of architecture as ours, like a flatter kind of nose, a long face with a heavy chin, really skinny, tight black outfit with like a black darker circle, like of technology or something here. And she was just leaning against the bench with her arms crossed the whole time while we were talking to each other. And since then I've had a lot of interactions with them of a similar kind, where they're social interactions, where they've come to my house or they take me away. Levitating, such a freaky feeling, when they're levitating you and you, Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So that's sort of how it's sort of progressed from sort of earlier, much more subtle interactions when I was a kid, and then sort of medical like stuff to more social kind of interactions with. And they said that they're called the Majjana. And so I just like coined a spelling for it, Majjena. I mean, you could spell that any way you like, I suppose, yeah. But then it was after they told me that. And a few times they'd said what they're called, and I was asking for clarity and pronunciation and stuff. And they're like, "Yeah, that's how you say it. That's good enough." You know, it was a while later that I made the connection with the Australian Wandjina, and started to think maybe that those petroglyphs in the Kimberley, in Australia, that are many, many thousands of years old, that have the pale beings with the huge eyes, I started to think maybe this is the same word. And since then, found other beings that were very similar, probably the same race from other areas of folklore, like the Zulus have the Mantidan, which is similar to the year when it's pronounced to Majjana as well, pale future human race. So there you go. Sorry, I'm rambling a bit.
No, that's okay. This is incredible. There's so many directions I want to go there. They apparently have incredible control over our perception. How were most of these kind of social interactions initiated? You just would start feeling this strange feeling that you were describing earlier, or was it sometimes when you're sleeping?
Normally, I'll suddenly feel that there's a presence in the house, and also I'll suddenly feel like there's some kind of movement in my head or body. And then I'll start feeling that there's some kind of control being exerted on me, like perhaps like pacifying me or something like that. I'll know that they're there. And then I'll see shadow people. Sometimes voices will start up in the house, like there'll be the telepathic communication, but sometimes voices, disembodied voices in the house, and they're usually exerting some kind of mental control over me, where I am unable to move very easily, but sometimes they relinquish that as well. There have been a few times where I am lucid while this is actually happening. There was one time where they came in particular, where I felt particularly lucid, when they actually gave me food to eat as well, which was like a biscuit kind of cake kind of thing. And I ate it and followed them out into the next room. And then I went back to bed, lay down, and I could still feel it on my teeth as I was getting back in bed. And people might say, "Why didn't you take a sample? What are you doing, you idiot?" You know. But that kind of thing doesn't occur to me at the time to do it.
Yeah.
Or if it does occur, it's almost like it feels like it'd be rude. It'd be inappropriate. That's the overwhelming feeling. It'd be inappropriate to do anything like that, which is probably some kind of influence from them. But that particular time when I lay back down, one of them came in these boa suits, these dark suits, stood over the top of me again while I was lying down. I looked up at them. And then when I turned back around, I think a smaller one ran in behind me and sneezed on me, which is just the most bizarre thing. But this is like bringing the experience back down into the mundane for me as well. I'm like, I think one of their children just sneezed on me, you know. Wow. Maybe then I should have gotten the thing out and be like getting the saliva for the DNA or something. But that kind of thing, it just doesn't occur to me, or it doesn't feel right. But so the experiences can go from being, sort of dreamlike and obviously manipulation on me, or kind of evoking a feeling of apathy in me, an apathetic feeling as well. Sometimes I have these experiences, and at the time it's the most normal thing in the world until they're gone, and then I'm like...
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Holy moly. I was just talking to an 8-foot-tall guy in my kitchen. You know, but at the time it's like, oh yeah, I know this guy. This is normal. This is, yeah. So hardly any or no mental manipulation, all the way down to strong exertion of manipulation. Sometimes messing with my eyes as well, you know, like sometimes they don't want me to see them or don't want to see where I am. So they can, make it so that my eyes are seeing things that are obviously not matching the physical reality, like seeing the ceiling of my bedroom unchanging while I'm moving my eyes. Like it's the same image stuck on my eyes, turning my head and I can still only see that, feeling them rolling me over or even sitting me up. And I've still got, which sounds quite primitive in a way, you know, like can they not allow for that? I think they can allow for that in certain circumstances where they exert, like they cast some kind of glamour on you or a suggestion that you are somewhere safe that you'd prefer to be rather than on their ship or underground or whatever. But in some situations it's like they hijack your eyes and present you a still shot of something that you'd find comfortable to see, even if it's inappropriate, sort of. I don't know why they now choose one over the other sometimes, but
well, I know you describe the female entity that you were kind of having this conversation with. Do most of these look somewhat the same, and how tall are they? Just give us a basic description. And you also said they wore some kind of suits at times, right?
Yeah, that's right. They can vary in height dramatically. So I've seen really small people that are like 2 foot tall, some of their children. They take a very long time to grow. So some of the memories that are coming back to me from my childhood as well are of incredibly small people, like maybe like 2 foot tall or something like that. But 4 foot tall, 5 foot tall, and as they grow older, they slowly grow. So most of the individuals I've seen are around about my height. I'm 5'8", between 5'8" and like 6'6" or something like that. Like, but I have seen individuals that are at least 8 foot tall, maybe even 9 foot tall. Those individuals that I've seen are usually wearing floor length cloaks, hooded cloaks when they come, the really tall ones. They're elders, maybe they have a priestly class as well. And I think some of their elders do that. Some of the medics I've seen have been really tall as well. The medics wear like gloves, black lenses over the tops of their eyes, and then just in a similar fashion to our own doctors and things, they cover their mouth, cover their hair, tight white outfits. And their hands, they have really long four fingers, half as long as ours again, or maybe even twice as long, whereas their thumb is vestigial and is like half the length of ours or something like that. And it looks like it's further up their hand, but the length of their hand is so much more. And then they've got like a line down the middle, and the four fingers prehensile and oppose each other. They become like thumbs, and they move, the four fingers move out and pick up objects and things like that. And they have, the really tall ones are really hunched. Like they have problems with their backs, their vertebrae or something, and they start to get like a pushed forwards shoulders and hunched look to them, and a real sort of S shape to their back when they get quite tall. What I call Boas suits, BOAS, which I named after the Antonio Vilas Boas, the famous case from Brazil in 1957, where he had interactions with pale beings, but at one stage they were wearing these dark suits, and which struck me as a version of the same kind of suits that I've seen. So I just thought I'll call them Boas suits. But skin tight again, black or grey normally, with the black circular technology on the chest that's darker that looks like black marble or something like that on the chest, a helmet, a black helmet, and then a nose piece, like a long nose piece that sort of flares out, and it goes back up over the top of the helmet, goggles that glow red at night, and like it's for night vision, presumably. I don't know what's going on there, really, how that would work, but and another breathing device, which they've told me is not for them. They can breathe out air. This is for keeping out allergens. So they're susceptible to a lot of allergies, keeping out pollen and dust and things like this. And they can cloak in these. They can become intangible so that they can pass through walls. They can levitate in them when they're levitating. I've seen them do it. They go all fuzzy looking and they almost look like they got fur. They almost look like a furry thing, and then they take off and they got like a black cloud comes up over the top. Super speed, super strength. These suits, they're soldier suits, basically. They're like super soldier suits. Invulnerable as well. They're impervious to bullets, bladed weapons and things like that. And the nose piece, I've come to understand, is for amplifying and resonating sound. Because as they hoot and howl and roar and make these powerful sounds to communicate over huge distances in like national parks, state parks, wilderness areas. They have lots of habitations in underneath our wilderness areas all across the face of the earth. And they have, they use their own language, their own natural language, kind of sounds to our ears like Korean or Japanese when you hear it spoken, which I've heard it spoken on a few times. I thought it was Japanese at first. And they have what I call camo cants, camouflage languages, where sometimes they'll sound like dogs or birds chirping, sort of like a cross between a monkey and a fox you hear as well, like a sort of like a giggling, laughing sort of sound, but then also howling and hooting and things like that.
That's crazy.
And the recordings, the Sierra sounds are definitely them. I know that a lot of people consider the Sierra sounds that were done by Ron Moorhead and Al Berry. Yeah. In the Sierra Nevada mountains, California in the 70s, consider that to be evidence for Bigfoot.
Right.
But that is definitely them. That is them. That is that.
Yeah, when you were saying those howls, that's what I was thinking of, those exact same Bigfoot howls that you were just referring to, or,
Yeah, for sure.
Misunderstood Bigfoot.
And that sound, how it sort of sounds like the idea of like an anime cartoon, like that really sort of overtly masculine Japanese samurai speech, that kind of really speaking from the chest or from the gut. That's their natural language. But then they code switch between all these different other kinds of languages to confuse us, basically. They're sort of like camouflage languages. And I've heard them, they switch between them. Like they'll be saying something. One of them will be talking in their normal language, and then halfway through the sentence, they'll switch and they'll start chirping to each other as they like switching between. They can get incredibly tall if they're quite old, and they get to ages like 600-800 years old. If they're lucky, they're very lucky, because like theoretically they can get to that age.
Wow. Now, genetically,
they have issues.
Do you remember most of the dialogue that you have whenever you're having these meetings, and have they told you a lot of this information about themselves that you're repeating? Are you ready to live a more free, healthy, and abundant life? Transform your yard into a food forest and create a system for self-reliance that's easy and enjoyable with our friends at Food Forest Abundance. No matter where you're starting from, you can become more self-reliant, and you can take your self-reliance to the next level by becoming a producer of your own food through growing and foraging, and learn how to turn your property into an income-producing source of economic self-reliance. They can help you get off-grid and learn what systems to employ for food, water, and energy self-reliance, and live abundantly and in full connection with your property and what you produce.
Click the link in the description to get started with your very own food forest and have your own sustainable source of livelihood and become self-sufficient with Food Forest Abundance. Just click the link in the description to get started with your very own food forest today.
Yes, they've told me a lot of this information, and sometimes I remember lots of it. Other times, I feel like I should remember it, and they're telling me stuff, and I say to them, I'm not going to remember this. And they say, oh, you're going to remember it. Don't worry about it. You'll remember it at some stage. But yeah, so some of it is them telling me directly. Other stuff feels almost like abstract ideas being communicated to me. Maybe, you know, in ufology, people would call that a download or something, where rather than it being linguistically, you know, taught to me, it just feels like they're imparting all this information to me when they're present. And all of a sudden I'll understand, and I'll say, I'll ask for confirmation. I'll say, is that right? Is that what this is like? And they'll say, yes. And then, you know, but also some of the stuff I know about them, I've worked out myself through investigating them, through looking for them in folklore, and in other people's cases and things like that from ancient times up until today, you know. And I was inspired by Jacques Vallée's ideas of seeing that, recognizing that the Celtic fairy faith in particular of old times, the beings represented in that are identical to the beings spoken of, or a lot of the races talked about in modern UFO lore and understanding. And then I was, so Jacques Vallée, and then Mac Tonies, who coined the term crypto-terrestrials anyway, which I've stolen from him, you know, hidden earthlings, where he decided that the evidence was pointing towards the race behind the UFO phenomena and ET abduction phenomena and things like that, is more likely indigenous to this planet than being some kind of extrasolar race. Seems to have some kind of genetic affiliation with us, to be interested in mating with us or taking genetic samples and that kind of stuff. So utilizing, like, sort of springboarding off those guys' ideas as well, I was like, these dudes are on the right track. And then I took the investigation further. And in my book, Children of Orion, like, I compare of Gaelic folklore to, you know, modern ET related stuff, and I focus in particular looking on the race that I know well. And so in Gaelic folklore, there's the race called Nahuishlan, the gentry, and, you know, sometimes they're called Nashihin, but they're a tall, fair race, subterranean dwelling, that whistled to each other. It can become invisible at will, that can act as poltergeist, have, you know, very magical, cast glamours on people, confuse people, can be dangerous if they're not placated, can even kill or damage livestock if it comes too close to their underground habitations. These are the characteristics of Nahuishlan, Gaelic gentry. And Charles Hall, I discovered, you know, Charles Hall wrote the Millennial Hospitality books, and he was a weather observer in the United States Air Force, posted in Nevada, at Nellis Air Force Base at Indian Springs. You go out and send his balloons aloft and with a theodolite track them and all that kind of stuff. That was his job there for 2 years. And he had this interaction with a tall, fair race of beings that chirped and whistled and were subterranean dwelling and would mess with him in poltergeist kind of ways. And I was realizing that these are identical beings, you know, that have been here for a very long time. And these are the same beings that I am interacting with. So Charles Hall called them tall whites, and he coined that term really before. I'm not 100% sure. I'm 99.9% sure that in ufology, the term tall whites wasn't around, I don't think, until the early 2000s. So some of your listeners or yourself might be able to dig up uses of that term before Charles Hall, but I'm pretty sure that Charles Hall was the first guy to use the term tall whites to refer to, like, a tall, fair race of ETs. Mm. Before then, people were more likely to call them Nordics.
Right.
Nowadays, people often make a distinction between tall whites and Nordics. And I sort of think of that as being an artificial distinction. Mm. I think it's probably the same dudes that were once called Nordics, now called tall whites. But he called them tall whites. They told me they're called Mudjana. And so in my first book, I used the term Orions a lot for them. And that's because when I was a kid, at one stage, when I was like a teenager, maybe it would have been about teenage years, when I thought they were fairies, one of them communicated to me that they were the saucepan people. And I was a little bit confused by that. But then I came to realize that what they meant was Orion, the constellation, because in Australia we call Orion the saucepan. And then at another stage I'd said to them, you're a different race of humans maybe, or a different race of hominins that's not Homo sapiens, but that left Earth and have come back again or something like that. I was sort of having these kinds of speculative ideas about what was going on, what was happening to me. And they said, oh, it's more complicated than that. That was their response then. And then much later in my life, they said to me, we are you, we are your future. And as I went through the different cases that I was investigating, I was finding, like symbols representing Orion's belt. Like in the Vilas Boas case, there's famous hieroglyphs or writing that have three dots that conform precisely to the layout of Orion's belt, and then it has lines and squiggles and things like that. That taken on its own might be a coincidence. You know, Orion's belt, if you're really looking for something, of course, in nature, you can see it everywhere, you know, with pareidolia and whatnot. But as I was investigating the cases, I was finding that this reference to Orion continues, you know, like in the Crabwood crop circle, which is also produced by this same race, the famous Crabwood crop circle in England from 2002, where you actually had this image of an ET-like being with a disc with binary code in English on it. And just to the side of it, the three dots, three stars conforming precisely to Orion's belt. And then there are other cases as well where Orion comes into focus. You could call them Orions. Now, they're originally from Earth, but it gets quite complicated. I don't know if you want me to go into that kind of stuff where...
Yeah, well, go ahead. Let's, because I have some other questions after that, but let's talk about that for a second.
The idea that, yes, McTonies was right in the sense that they are indigenous to the Earth or a version of the Earth. So this is Rick and Morty kind of stuff, really, and it's not quite time travel. They haven't traveled to their ancient past. They've crossed into another timeline or dimension or universe, which is identical to their own at an earlier point in its history. So they're not actually from our future and we're not from their past. Their reasons for coming here is the genetic, an impoverishment to their genomes through too much genetic engineering, prolonging their lifespans, messing with their own DNA, basically. They couldn't alleviate this. They couldn't write this, correct this with all the maladies and pathologies are developing for them. They decided to locate ancient versions of themselves.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
From before they started messing with their own DNA to have intercourse, to reproduce, to study, to try and augment themselves again and bring some kind of natural, evolution by natural selection back into the mix in a way, even though this is still all highly artificial. But they've been messing with themselves in an artificial way for so long, they're ill, they're sick. They don't heal properly. They're susceptible to disease. And they see in us archaic, free-range versions of themselves that they whose gene pool they can dip into. And that's their main reason for being here, for coming. And they've been here back here for a long time, and they've colonized it, and they're underground, they're under our oceans, they move around and follow the warmth. So certain parts, certain underground habitations remain dormant. If that part of the earth's in winter, et cetera. So
what you were telling us earlier about the medical procedures that these guys were doing to you at one point. Do you remember clearly any of those in details that you could tell us about?
One of them, they were drilling into the bottom of my foot, and they were all standing around me, and there were a couple of them at the end of the bed or whatever it was I was on. And I lifted my foot for them as well, and I was thinking, I am so helpful. Now, I don't know whether they were suggesting, they probably were suggesting that I should do that, but I remember thinking, I'm going to be so helpful in this interaction. I'm going to hold my foot up for them. And they drilled into my foot, and I was making sure they didn't have to take too much of the weight of my leg. Drilled into the bottom of my foot, no pain in this particular time. Then they wandered around to the back of the bed and drilled directly into the top of my head, again with no pain, but with like a whizzing sound, like being at the dentist, drill sound. And then they started to push me to roll me over, and I thought that it was time to go home. So I started to get up, and then they were like, no, and they grabbed me and sort of moved me back again. And I was trying to be as compliant as possible. I was thinking, I'm going to make it really easy for these guys. But, you know, again, this is sort of power of suggestion, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a nice guy. You know, I don't know. But anyway, so they rolled me over, and then they were doing it into my back, which I presume was into a rib. So I could feel it happening, but not the pain. So I could feel something going in, but no pain associated with it. So I wasn't completely numb. And there was, at the whole time, there was a woman sitting beside me, one of them, a female sitting beside me without the medical gear on, with her big blue eyes and whatnot, sitting there. And she got off, she stood up and went to walk beside me. And I thought, I'm going to be clever. I'm going to say, thanks, Orions, into the operating theater or whatever it was. And I thought, I'm just going to do this. I feel like it's inappropriate now, but I'm going to do it. And I went to do it. And before I could even say, I was thinking of doing it, she knelt down and shushed me, right? And then she kept walking. And I was like, I'm going to say it anyway. So I did. I said, thanks, Orions. And they just kept working. And then I just thought that was hilarious. And I was laughing away to myself. And then a voice right in the middle of my head said, that isn't funny, right? And then I felt all sheepish about that. And they said, but you received an ovation. So I think they liked the idea that I obviously knew who they and what they are. You know? And then I said, so what was that about? And they said, for language and running. And I was like, what does that even mean? And they said, it's a gift. Stop going on about it. And then they took me back again. So that was one experience, it was pretty full on. And the whole time it was happening, there was either a window, or maybe it was just like an image, like a TV screen or monitor or something, that had purple sort of pink hues to it. That was a rocky landscape with like a purple sky outside. It looked like maybe it was outside the window. And I was thinking, man, this is an Earth. What's going on here? But I think maybe there's a possibility it was just like a digital display, you know, like an image, you know. I'm not sure about that, but so that was one there. Another time they they said to me, we're going to operate on you, but we need permission for this one. And I said, okay, if it's beneficial to me or whatever. And they were like, yeah. And then I think they didn't reply to that. And then I said, okay, yeah, go for it. And then they just said confirmation. And then I blacked out. And then I woke up, I thought, I don't know what they just did to me. And there's nothing on me and stuff. And I'm thinking, what was that procedure that it required extra permission? Another time it felt like they were actually opening you right up, but there was no pain. And I was thinking, why? You know, they didn't tell me that time what they thought they were doing. Another time I was actually in what looked like one of our hospitals. It was just like it was a hospital. And I was sitting up and there was a tall imagine a woman, but she had like an obvious wig on, like a dark wig. And another guy, a doctor, who was Majina, but he was dressed like one of their medics. And then there was a screen that looked, and I presumed it was my body, but upside down with a kind of like a green sort of weird sort of haze to it. And they were showing me an image of my own body and they were pointing at it. And they said, and one of them said, it's too early to see any changes yet. And I was like, what is this? And they didn't tell me what they meant by that. And I noticed on the upside down image, there were two green blobs on the image beside my head. So there's like an upside down image of a person with two green blobs on either side. And I went to look and I felt like there was resistance, like I couldn't quite look. And then the woman said, pay no attention to the ghosts beside you. But I can't remember if she said ghosts or angels now. Pay no attention to the angels beside you or the ghosts beside you. So I presume that there were like two guards or there were two people standing there when they were actually coming up on the image of the scan as well, because they were standing so close. And then I got up and I couldn't walk properly and they sat me in a wheelchair and wheeled me out into the parking lot. And I didn't know, like on Earth somewhere, there were streetlights and stuff. Put me into like an RV kind of vehicle, like what people call Tic Tacs probably on the media and stuff, like a bus that's got no wheels. Loaded me into the back of that and then, boom, off we go. Wow. And then I can't remember what happened then. I think that, like, they've taken some memory there.
Yeah, that's incredible. Do you think that they're doing this to everyone and we just have no recollection of this and you just have kind of a stronger, different type of connection or perception to this?
Yeah, I think they do this to a lot of people. And for whatever reason, they allow me to remember a lot more than they allow other people, but that it is happening. Similar things are happening to a lot of people across the face of the earth all the time. Now, you know, you might have inklings that something's been going on and just think, oh, it's probably nothing, or have no understanding or recollection of anything. But I say to people that if you think your house is haunted and you have shadow people or poltergeist activity, disembodied voices, hear boots on your roof at night coming down the stairs, music, people standing over you in the middle of the night, feelings of hands on your body in the middle of the night and there's no one there, that's very likely that you are an experiencer, an imagined experiencer, and there can be lots of different reasons why they would be experiencing with you. One of them is that they breed with us as well, so you may be part of their breeding program. Having said that, it's supposed to be consensual. But the point I often raise with this is I see ethical issues with getting someone's consent, explaining to them that you're a race that requires for your next generation, you know, to be augmented by some of our healthy DNA and all that kind of stuff, getting the person's okay, and then suppressing their memory of having consented.
Right.
Yeah. And then they just think their house is haunted, or that there's ghosts or whatever. But yeah, lots and lots of paranormal activity that is attributed to like deceased humans, you know, like spirits and ghosts or cryptids and all that kind of stuff. Mm. A lot of it is them, in my opinion. And I talk about that in my book, you know, stuff.
How much do you think we know our clandestine groups, our three-letter agencies, the Black Projects, these guys that, you know, that we don't hear about in the mainstream, how much do you think that they know and even maybe participate with these guys and things?
Yeah, I think they know a lot. So, you know, I personally am quite satisfied that the group Majestic exists or did exist and probably has been reformed and gone through a lot of different names and things like that since, but I think the shadow government kind of groups, sort of elite groups that are behind you know, elected governments and elected officials that are kind of sort of like our permanent kind of puppet masters on the earth, Homo sapiens rulers in a way behind the curtains, they've had interactions and treaties and whatnot with these guys for a long time, you know, at least since the 40s, since the 1940s, but maybe even earlier, especially some of these sort of esoteric groups, like, you know, that the Freemasons, for instance, have had highly esoteric, you know, mystical groups that have been around for centuries, passing on lore and information, and highly superstitious people, you know, like a lot of the people that are our rulers of the world believe some really superstitious stuff. And the Mudgena, I'm fairly certain they see the Mudgena and also other races as being their ancient gods that they used to think were maybe had gone or were figurative or something like that, but are flesh and bone and present. And I suspect they're very frightened of them, that the people, the Homo sapiens power structure in the world is terrified of what I would say this crypto-terrestrial presence, which could just like crack them like an egg if they felt like it.
Right.
But I think that they don't interact with us. They don't exert influence on our elites and things like that too much. They only step in if they feel that there's issues they need to address. One of them is that, you know, there needs to be changes about the way we're abusing the resources of our planet and deforesting and you know, killing off all the different kinds of biodiversity. And generally our biosphere is quite sick at the moment. This is a problem. And the cryptoterrestrial, particularly the Mudgeners, are not happy about that kind of stuff, as you can imagine, because they're back here sharing this world with us. For sure they've had interactions with them. And had treaties. And at the moment, I would not know what kind of how friendly their interactions are and whether they do have treaties and meetings anymore or whether that kind of stuff has stopped.
Do you think these beings mainly have our best interest in mind, or do you think that there are different groups that may not, that some may be more malevolent than others?
I think that this particular group, the Mudgena, does have our best interest, or they have the Earth's best interest. Mm. And then also they require us as well. I mean, you can look, everyone's selfish in the end, maybe. You can look at them as being quite selfish. They require access to us as sort of versions of themselves that have been hewn by time and natural selection that are healthy versions of themselves that they can utilize. They require us to survive or they'll die out themselves. Without access to us, they'll eventually become extinct. But having said that, a healthy human population requires a healthy biosphere. You know, to maintain an organism, to like the Earth, like a systemic, holistic or kind of organism like the Earth, you can say it. You have to take care of it in deep systemic ways. You know, and you could say you could use the analogy of how do you keep a plant healthy? Well, you water the roots, you feed the roots, You don't necessarily, you know, like polish the leaves. If you want shiny leaves, you don't need to polish the leaves. You need to feed the tree and water the tree, which is to say if they want healthy human populations, healthy earth, healthy biosphere, healthy plant kingdom, healthy animal kingdom, healthy earth, healthy human. They want us to survive. I think there has been a threat at some stage that we are either beside them in the future or under their feet, in the sense that we can either join them and become an advanced group sharing in these sophisticated technologies, provided that they appreciate our worldview and our belief systems and consider us to be worthy in some way to partake in this. Otherwise, and that would be for us to be beside them. Otherwise, we would be under their feet, which is what we have been for thousands of years, in the sense that we are like, we're just primitive populations of people on the earth with them, with advanced sophisticated technologies as our gods that occasionally appear, that creep into our houses at night as succubi and incubi, or Anunnaki, the fairy lover. So up until this point in our reality, basically we have been under their feet. Now we can either stay under their feet and be punished even in some way, have our technologies stripped from us, be returned to earlier forms of civilized advancement, certainly pre-industrial, but maybe even earlier, you know, because of our negative effect on the biosphere and the planet at the moment. Or we can take the leap with them and be gifted advanced technologies and join them in a more sort of, you know, brotherly, sisterly kind of way. But I think that option is the one that's going to play out now, the better one, the one that sounds better.
I hope so. While we're talking about their technology, you were talking kind of briefly about some of the things that they have the ability to do, especially when you're looking at things like changing our perception or, appearing as a poltergeist or disappearing, things like this, levitation. Do you think that this is just forms of their advanced technology that we don't understand, or could it even be some kind of form of magic?
They are flesh and blood and nuts and bolts, you know. They have their own kind of, you could say they're spiritual in the sense that they are a very spiritual people. They have their own religion and spirituality, but they've expressed to me on a number of occasions they are the same as us. If we are flesh and blood beings, they are too. And they are definitely relying on technologies, sophisticated technologies. Their technologies are so far advanced that the line between magic and technology, I suppose, sort of falls away, where it starts to become, it's up in the air and it's debatable as to whether these two terms as some kind of dichotomy can really exist anymore. They're going to fall, they're going to merge together, because when you have technologies that are so advanced that you can travel interdimensionally or shift your atomic structure so that you can become non-physical, it's really hard to say anymore. It's hard to now say that they are material if they can do those kinds of things. But the base reality, I suppose, of it is that they're material technologies that are allowing them to become something comparable to spiritual beings for certain periods of time by flicking a button, you know, or whatever. Their own spiritual, I know a lot about their own religious system as well, their own spiritual stuff. I used to interpret what they were telling me to be sort of like a kind of idealism, like when you talk like consciousness being base reality. You know, people talk a lot about that kind of thing these days, especially in the UFO community and things. Eastern mysticism, certain kinds of Hinduism and Buddhism and things like that have given rise in the West to a lot of these ideas nowadays in the New Age community and things like that. I thought that they were telling me something like that, but I've come to appreciate now more that they their understanding of base reality is monist in the sense that they think that there is only one kind of substance or stuff that the universe is comprised of. They're not dualist and they think some things are physical and some things are spiritual. They think everything is one, but sometimes it behaves in ways that we would call spiritual and sometimes it behaves in ways that we would call material. Nonetheless, it is always the one substance. It's kind of like a synthesis or a merging of idealism and materialism, a reconciliation of those into one, of the mind and merging of mind and matter to recognize that they are the same thing in the end. Neither, it's not that everything turns out to be mind and it's not that everything turns out to be matter. It's that everything turns out to be this third substance, which is both of them together in some way, you know.
Right.
They don't believe in individual souls. So they don't think that people have like an atomic soul, like an indivisible soul, that they think of everyone as being an expression or a reduction of the one great being, the one great world soul. So what makes a person is that they are limited in certain ways. And some people are limited in certain ways and another person who's a different individual will be limited in different ways. But both of them are retractions or reductions of the one, which is the whole system, the entire, all reality. And then they also have an idea of what they call the land of the black star or the black sun, which is, and they have a symbol to represent it as well, which has like a dragon's face. It looks kind of like a dragon's face in the middle with heaps of eyes running down it. This is their understanding of a world of potential that is outside the actualized world. So our world is actualized, and in that way it is reduced. It has been reduced from being the potential world. The potential world is all possible worlds existing at once, which means it is neither this nor that. It's a world beyond dualism. Whereas what we would normally call this world is a binary system of a kind, a dualistic system where things are separated. There can be ones, there can be zeros, there can be this, there can be that. In this other realm, which they tap into to travel massive distances in short periods, it is a world where everything exists and nothing exists. If something is this, then it's also that. So this is an idea that they've expressed to me a few different times in different ways, but I'm slowly learning more and more. And I think they're initiating me into some of these kinds of ideas. So early on, I used to think it's just my job or task to investigate their presence and show and demonstrate to people beyond reasonable doubt that they exist by building crypto-terrestrial profile of characteristics and showing and pointing them out and demonstrating, you know, which I try to do in my books. But just in the past couple of years, or maybe even 1 year, I've realized that it's more than that. They want more than that of me, something which I find quite uncomfortable, actually, in taking on a role where they want me to express to people ideas about their spirituality and ways that we can move forward as apparently five races, us and there's four other ones, the future human, as five races together by each other's side without us being under their feet anymore. So, I don't like being a public person and I'm very uncomfortable doing public speaking and that kind of stuff. It was like my nightmare when I was a kid, having to talk on the radio or anything like that. Yeah. I find it sort of embarrassing in the sense that when I say to people, these people are instructing me about this and want me to tell people, I feel like an idiot. I just feel like it just sounds so cliche, you know, it sounds so silly. But this apparently is what they want me to be doing these days. So I'm like, oh, okay, dudes, let's do this.
It's incredible. How do you, based on your understanding, how do they feel about the direction we're headed on the planet? You said that they themselves tinkered with their own DNA too much, and they're not healthy anymore. And we see us doing the same things. I mean, we eat the crappiest food. Our medical and pharmaceutical companies are just here to keep us sick and kill us. So our future, as far as what we're doing to our own bodies, doesn't look too good right now. How do they feel about that?
Yeah, they're not happy about that kind of thing. And they're not happy about us being on the precipice of direct genetic engineering and manipulation in our own bodies to eliminate, sickness or prolong our lifespans, all this kind of stuff as well. But then also, yeah, filling our bodies with all of these chemicals and plastics all through our form now and all that kind of stuff. No, well, we're on the way to becoming useless to them in that sense as well, if you want to look at it from their own perspective. And even if you're going to decide that they're, you know, ultimately, like probably most people are, they're selfish when it comes down to it, in wanting to maintain us as healthy beings as an extension of them. This is not, we're not going the right way to remain in good stead with them, you know, in that way. But I think that I'm hopeful that a couple of years ago I wouldn't have been as hopeful as I am now that we're on the precipice of some kind of change for the positive, with less of that being an issue with their help. Even if they're working behind the scenes and guiding the Homo sapiens elites to shift their own directions, which they're quite capable of doing, I'm sure that in the end, if the CTs, if the cryptoterrestrials, the Mugino and the others decide that something has to be done, they say jump. Our rulers, our dark elites or whatever say how high. There's no way that they can compete with their technology. Just none at all. Like, not even though people talk about us back engineering craft and having our own advancements, having our own anti-gravitic technologies, having this and that, that's a drop in the ocean. Like us trying to engage with them in any way, even with our new toys that maybe we have anti-gravitic stuff and weapons and stuff like that, it'd be like trying to attack an elephant with a wet train ticket or something like that. We're talking about something way, way beyond our capabilities. And they said that up until about 6 months ago, they said to me, there are a million of us. They were saying there's a million of them. Just a couple of months ago, they said, we are now 12 million. So I don't know. So at some stage, there's been some contact again with the other timeline, and heaps of them have jumped across, I think. And I think I'm pretty sure I'm right. I'm not 100% sure I'm right, but that they're thinking this reality now is their future, rather than harvesting healthy DNA and taking it back to where they're from, their own timelines and whatnot. They've decided, no, they're going to set up permanent digs here. This is their world now. And they're going to do anything to protect it, protect the biosphere of the Earth as like this piece, this museum piece, a version of their ancient world. And they're not happy with us. You know, there's lots of, it's not just to do with, you know, us abusing the planet and all that kind of stuff, but abusing each other as well. You know, again, this sounds a bit corny, but it doesn't sound corny, I suppose. They are incredibly upset with the idea that we allow people to die from poverty living on streets in our cities. They're particularly offended by the idea that we don't look after our own children as well. Mm. I had an experience once where they took me, I think it was into a mountain, and they showed me our own children that they had in hospital beds. One girl had like half of her face blown off and she had like tubes going into her. And they said, these are your children that we take and heal. And I was like, man. And they in a lot of ways, they think very little of us as a race. And they know us in the sense that they are in our heads. We can't hide anything from them. They know what we're capable of. They know what we've done. They know an individual's past and likely, you know, future actions and that kind of stuff. and they're not happy. You know, they don't think much of us as a race. And they socially as well, in that kind of way, you know, that we don't take care of our own, which is incredibly offensive to them. So,
yeah. Now you, you said these guys live underground and in mountains. What about, in the ocean underwater?
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, they said under Bass Strait, where I am here, Bass Strait is the strip, of ocean that's going between the state of Victoria on the mainland, in the southeast, and Tasmania, the state, the island state just below it. There's a strip of water there called Bass Strait. There's a continental shelf, and they said that they have structures within that continental shelf down here. But all over the world, they have, undersea. Structures, facilities in the earth, you know, in the crust, but under the water. Yeah, for sure.
Wow. Now, as your current experiences go, how often are you having these?
Well, they said to me just recently, we visit you for 10 minutes every night for education. And I certainly don't remember physical visitations for 10 minutes every night. I'm conscious of them coming to the house and interacting with me some way, or taking me maybe once a month. Having said that, linguistic telepathic communication is almost all the time. If I were to sit down and sort of zone out a bit and ask if any of them were around, it wouldn't take too long for one of them to reply. And every night when I go to bed, I hear them interacting with each other. Some of them as well, I think, are guards. So they said, they've said heaps of times, we protect you. And they actually have dudes, soldiers or guards permanently here, I think, or nearby, especially at night. I know some of their names as well. One of them they call her Sibylline. It's a female guard. And then there's another guy, Joe, calls himself Joseph Joe. I think they adopt a lot of our names in a similar way to like Chinese people might adopt Western names when they're interacting with us, because they don't want us butchering their names or whatever. But in this same kind of way, they adopt a lot of sort of fairly normal sounding names, our names and things like that. But so I hear them moving around sometimes, and sometimes they'll say things to me if I talk to them, but they are sort of reluctant to interact with me because I think their job isn't to interact with me, those guys. But anyway, yeah.
Well, that's incredible. What is your plans for any future communication about these to the world? I mean, you have your book, Children of Orion. Are you planning on doing any other books or any more writing about it?
Yeah. I'm currently engaged full on with the second book. And, the first one's published by Flying Disc Press, Philip Mantle at Flying Disc Press, and he's said that he'll take the second one on as well, and it'll definitely be out next year, but it should be early next year that the second one will be coming out, Tribes of the Black Star, Crypto-Terrestrials in Our Future. That's the working title at the moment anyway. I'm pretty sure that will be the title. But, yeah, for sure, that's what I'm doing with most of my time at the moment, writing the second one. Which has a lot more, pattern recognition profiling from different cases through history, but also has much more of a bent on looking at their languages or linguists and what I know so far about their not only their own natural language, but also these camouflage languages they use, sort of like, what would you call them, like cryptolects. They're like they're contrived languages they've manufactured themselves to mimic our wildlife, and then also some of the stuff about their spirituality and things like that, and what I am pretty sure will come to be in our future, if we end up beside them rather than under their feet. I'm pretty sure the future's bright. So the next book, early next year anyway, dude. Yeah.
I love it. Incredible, man. Well, we are definitely going to have to talk again soon. We barely scratched the surface on some of this stuff, and you've got so many incredible stories. Before you head out, let the audience know where they can find your book, if you have a website, social media, all the good stuff.
Yeah, cool. Cheers, man. My book, Children of Orion, Finding the Crypto-Terrestrials, is on Amazon as paperback, hardcover, and digital. And I'm not on social media other than just having a YouTube channel. So if people are interested, it's just my name, Ryan Musgrave Evans. And I put videos of me spieling away maybe once a week or something like that. So if you're interested, check that out too. Thank you very much, dudes. Thanks so much for having me, man.
Yeah, this was fun.
Yeah, I'd definitely love to come back.
Yeah, for sure. We'll definitely do this again in the future. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening, and we'll talk again tomorrow. See y'all then.